Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by OSCOWellness.com, the coolest thing in pain relief, by RunCatalina.com. We've got the Catalina Eco Marathon, one of the amazing off-road events in Southern California, coming up on Saturday, November 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $75 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. We've had over 1 million downloads of our shows, and you can also sign up for our newsletter there. Our next guest, fascinating background. He's a senior sports marketing manager at Hoka One One, which means to fly on the surface of the earth. His name is Mike McManus. Mike, how the heck are you?
Oh, Bob, I'm fantastic. I'm so excited to be on the show. I mean, you mentioned Challenge Athletes Foundation. I know you were the founding member, so I've been a huge fan of that program and what you've everything you've done. So, man, thank you so much for asking me to join you today.
Well, I love it, and you, sometime you got to get down here and come by our CAF building. We got a lot of cool stuff going on.
I would love to. San Diego's not the worst place in the world to visit.
So, talk about growing up. It sounds like that your dad and probably the whole family, you guys were an endurance sports family way before a lot of people were into endurance sports.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. And I thought it was different back in the day, but I think the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and I grew up in Oakland, California, and my parents were extremely active, primarily with a lot of the running races around here. My father actually is a type 1 diabetic, so he started running and got involved in all the local races, San Francisco Beta Breakers and the annual Dipsy race, and started doing marathons, and of course the Dolphin South End Run with Walt Stack is, you know, just an amazing ambassador for running and especially for women's running, honestly, among other things that he brought to sport. But as a family, I have three younger brothers and an older sister, and you know, my dad started running, my mom was running, and they would literally take us to San Francisco every weekend, and you know, nothing was forced on us, but you know,
loved it.
I really enjoyed the 3 or 4 mile race that you did with the DSE club, and at some point, started following my dad to all of his races, and next thing I know, we start jumping in, and that's how I got started. It was very early, started watching the races in early 70s, and started running, 1974 or something like that, some of these races.
Well, you did your first Dipsy at the age of 9 in 1975, and I think your dad had a deal with you. Anytime you beat him, you got $5.
That was just the first time. Any time would have been a lot.
You would have made a lot of money. So it was the first time you beat him. How many times did you have to race him until you beat him?
I raced a few, but the strategy was always the same, Bob. It was go out and stay ahead of him,
right,
until he caught me. And I still, the first race I beat him was the DSE Coit Tower Run.
Yeah.
And the strategy was to go out full tilt, and I got up to the top of Coit Tower, and I was ahead of him. And then I was probably a lot lighter and had incentive. And of course, I was going downhill so I could recover. And I think I spent the $5 in about 10 minutes at the candy store or something.
and your dad was really sort of a renaissance guy, because we're talking two times doing Western States. He was doing the Ironman in the early 80s we're talking, we're a couple hundred of us out there doing the Ironman over in Kona in the early 80s. What was it about endurance that really drew your dad to it?
I don't think it was any different than probably what grabs everybody today, which still grabs me, and that's I think the sense of accomplishment, and of course, it's so daunting. I mean, he started first with marathons, and wanted to qualify for Boston every year, and he ran a sub-3, and then at some point moved up, and I remember he ran American River 50 miles, which a lot of times for somebody in and around the Bay Area is a good entry level ultra. And then he ran Lake Tahoe 3 times, 72 miles around there. And then, of course, Western States, which is still one of the most, historic and storied events. And he wanted that belt buckle. So, never a, a super fast guy, but incredibly determined, and that was his goal and his objective. And first year, you know, he ran 26 hours, and second year he ran 23, and then, you know, after that it was Ironman. So he, it was one goal after another. But I mean, Bob, I look back, and I think that's still what grabs people today as you get involved in the sport. And I don't think you naturally move up to those distances, but at some point you achieve what you're going to achieve, and then you look for the next thing. And my dad got really, I didn't think about it at the time, but sure, he got pretty hardcore. And of course, back in the day, nobody had all these extra, I don't know if they're things that actually help you, but things like power bar or
heart rate monitors, anything. There's nothing.
GPS, yeah. All the training devices. You just go out there. And I remember Western States, you know, I helped him out at the various stations, yeah. And we had baby food for him.
Right.
He got in, sat down in the chair, and we were stuffing baby food down and said, okay, Dad, keep going.
I had Big Mac fries and a Coke. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. I remember Walt Stack came to do Ironman in like 81 or 82. He had saddlebags with beer in it. That's what he had for the whole bike ride. The guy was crazy. The other thing that's interesting to me with your dad, when you mentioned that he's a type 1 diabetic, back then, I mean, now we think, oh, yeah, diabetics work out. But back then, I remember there was an athlete by the name of Bill Carlson who was the first diabetic to do Ironman. And that was a huge story because endurance was not something that was recommended for people who were dealing with diabetes.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I think a lot of it was trial and error. He recognized that it was working.
Yeah.
The exercise was working. And so, you know, he played rugby in college, but he moved into running, and he realized that he was able to manage his diabetes better than not if he stayed, you know, super fit and healthy. And so, you know, that was certainly the starting point. And then I think it became also something along with, you know, just like anybody else, getting excited about goals and achievement and running races and the whole scene, that everything was combined. So it was a pretty powerful mix.
So when I look at you as a runner, and I see, you know, 4:11 mile and 14:29 5K and 30:03 10K, 106 for the half, and two times you ran 2:22 for the marathon. Obviously, your range from a 4:11 mile to a 2:22 marathon, you don't see a lot of folks who do all of that. Was there a point where you realized, okay, I've got this track speed, but I've sort of got these genes that say go long, and you stepped up to those longer distances?
Yeah, I think with me, it was always it continues to be what I'm interested in, and you know, I mean, it's everything's relative. So I ran in high school and college, and ran all right. But of course, you know, when you run 30 minutes or, you know, you're breaking 15, it's still, in today's world, that's not going to get you too far in collegiate running. And
right.
I had some success, but you know, I grew up running the Dipsy every year, as you said, and
right.
And I grew up running the Oakland Trails, and so it was never lost on me that, hey, that was part of running. It's something that I've always enjoyed. So it was more of, I like running track, and I'm going to see how good I can get on the track. But it doesn't mean I have to give up running trails and the roads. And trails have always been something that I've really just loved and embraced. And, again, probably because I grew up running the Oakland Trails and running on Mount Tam every weekend and those sort of places. And then, you know, running the marathon, taking a few stabs at it. Only one ultra right now, but I guess there's still time to figure it out. But I think it's more just enjoying the sport and taking in what the sport gives you. And I've moved back and forth depending on what I want to do and keeps me interested.
You know what I love? As I was just writing a little piece for my website about, you know, first time I went to Catalina Marathon, and being a road guy, I was sort of assessing all the other people and going, oh, okay, the skinny people I got to worry about, sort of these little fireplug folks, they're not going to be a factor. Trail running is a different beast. And it's, you know, I remember some guy looking over at me and he could tell what I was thinking. And he goes, you know what, son? A lot of that cellulite's going to kick your ass to Avalon. You can't tell her, and I know you're coming from a track background, you're racing guys in the track who I bet are beating you. And then you take them on the trails, and that's an equalizer. It changes things, and it seems like the trails are really what speaks to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that is one of those strange things when you get on a course that's a lot more arduous, that throws a lot of things at you, or that has a lot more variables, then yeah, if you're comfortable in that environment, then sometimes you see yourself running with people that you wouldn't have any business running with, on a road or a track or so. So sure, that's attractive. But it's also, I think that's what makes it fun. I mean, that's what's so cool about today, Bob, is that, you see from trails to track to ultras and everything in between. I mean, it's what's so great about Hoka, and one of the reasons I love this company is that, there isn't one thing that a runner or an athlete has to say, hey, this is where I'm gonna throw everything in. This is where I'm gonna focus on. It's there's so much across the board right now that, you know what, if you want to be trail runner, there's so much out there for you as a trail runner. Then it's like, where do you want to go? What distance? What do you want to do? And then it's everything, same thing. If you want to hit the roads or tries, there's just so much out there, and everybody's doing it. So it's like on steroids, to where there was just a little race here and there.
Yep.
When I started.
Oh, I know. So you go from, you were at Adidas as a senior director, global sports marketing and running. And that's obviously a brand that's been around since the earth was cooling, right? It's been around forever and ever and ever. And now you're with a brand that was created in 2009, Hoka One One. What was, when you go from a brand that has been around forever to a brand that is evolving and obviously has taken the world by storm, what was that transition like?
Wow. Good. I mean, great question. I'm probably still getting used to the transition. I was with Adidas, as you said, for a long time. And I spent the last 9 years living in Germany, actually working out of their global headquarters. So in some cases, I would say one thing is just getting back and used to the U.S., relocated now to New York City and all the, just everything that the U.S. is all about and day-to-day life that was just different living in Europe. So besides just companies, there's a huge transition there. But I would also tell you that Hoka is just night and day from where Adidas is as a brand. And that doesn't mean one's better than the other, but it's Hoka's absolutely where I want to be right now. And, Adi's a big brand. It's a big brand. It's a big ship that moves,
sure,
and it moves pretty slowly, and they speak globally. But with Hoka, you have, as you said, a company that's so new. And one of the first things that hit me from the outside before there's any opportunity was how pure the innovation is that Hoka has brought to the table. And understanding the global market, which I do very well in my previous job, Hoka started out as this solution for trail running and ultra athletes in France. And I would tell you there's no place that's more intense about trail running anywhere in the world than France. And so it's this place and this honest truth that, Jean-Luc, one of the founders, was just trying to find a solution, an innovation to help these athletes that were covering a lot of up and down, a lot of ground for many hours. And they came up with this incredible innovation. And, of course, that innovation has now drifted to, moved across to track. And there are some incredible innovative spikes and fast shoes. And absolutely triathletes have picked this up, understanding
yes.
that, here's this amazing innovation that can help them and provide the support and cushion that they need when they're many hours into a race and their body is in completely different position than when they started. But I would tell you, Hoka is still very much working with the tip of the spear, and it's working on a very vertical side with athletes that I just talked about, ultra trail athletes, triathletes, road athletes, track athletes. And so forget the belly of fashion running shoes and lifestyle shoes, which is a big part of running. Hoka is just dealing with that, the sharp end of the stick, and that's everybody that's buying the product, everybody that's utilizing the product is there to try and benefit from the product. And I would tell you it's exactly the place I want to be right now, and that's working with the brand that is young, that's defining itself, that's working with athletes across all those different environments, and that's really still writing its own story. So I feel incredibly fortunate and honestly lucky to be a part of this brand and where we're going.
What, as somebody who's obviously a Hoka lover, and I'm sort of the dull end of the stick rather than the sharp end of the stick, but love the product. And it's funny because I was at the national championships this weekend, and it was like 58 of us in the 65 to 69 division, and there was another 70-some in the 60 to 64. I think triathlon has become sort of the fountain of youth, because I think as a runner, you're sort of the different guy, because you're still, you won the 50 to 54, USATF National Championships just last year. But a lot of us, as we get older, we can't run as much, and it seems like after the age of 50, it's hard to run faster than we did when we were younger. But man, as a triathlete, we can get better, right? We can be better at 65 than we were at 55. And I see the majority of the folks in my age division are wearing Hokas. And there's something about the shoe that's just so forgiving that allows us to, guys who haven't run in years are back running again. I mean, it's you can't say that about a lot of products, that this product actually saves people who haven't been able to run, and they're back doing it and just loving every second of it.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed the same thing. I was at Lake Placid a few weeks ago, and I was struck by the just how many people were wearing the product. And of course, triathletes, and I'm generalizing, but are such early adopters.
Yes.
So open to embracing innovation. And you know, when I was talking with my current boss about the job, and he was asking me, what do you know about the brand? And I started talking about I was equating Hoka One One to, and I'm a huge cyclist fan, and
right.
and still a huge fan of running and triathlons. I follow sport, and I liken it to, I said Cervelo bikes. I said I have a few Cervelo bikes, but I said, if you ask me where Cervelo really got their start, I would tell you it's in triathlon.
No question.
And I said they took this aerodynamic innovation to triathletes, and I said at some point, I said that grabbed the triathlon scene right away, but at some point, road bikes absolutely took over and took on some of the innovation and the design, and of course it went to time trialing bikes that the Tour of France are using. And I said, if you look at bikes today, no matter who it is, I said, I still see a Cervelo bike there. I still see elements that they brought, and of course that's what's so fantastic about innovation. I said, with Hoka, I see the same thing. It's no different from a brand that, in this real honest place of truth, came out with a solution for, it could have been old, broken guys that were trying to run up and down mountains or run as fast as they could over, UTMB or another crazy ultra that they have in France or Western States. And then, of course, what's happened is it's moved across to running. It's moved to track. But triathletes have absolutely embraced it and understand, hey, we want something that's going to help us get to the finish line faster. And as you said, maybe it'll allow us to do the sport where we were so beat up and broken from,
yes,
just all the wear and tear on our bodies.
Right. And it's fun, as a guy who's been in the running world forever, one of my big things has been that, the orthopedic reality is every runner eventually needs to become a cyclist or a triathlete. I mean, that's just the reality. You can't run forever. So knowing that, and you can run less and run forever because you can, you're doing your swim, you're doing your bike, you're tuning your body, you can do anaerobic workouts without doing as much running. But at the same time, when you're running in Hoka, you're able to run, right? Your body is able to handle the stress of swim and bike, and you get up and you have that extra support that comes with the Hoka One One product.
Absolutely. And I mean, what you said, I'm almost 51. I'll be 51 in a couple months. But
yeah,
when I turned 40, I actually quit. I quit running because I always wanted to race a bike. And so I, bought a bike, a road bike for my birthday, and I started racing a few months later and loved the sport. Still have a few bikes and raced quite a bit for 3 or 4 years before moving to Germany. But what I was going to tell you is one of the things that instantly hit me that I never realized as a runner, that of course any triathlete understands and any cyclist, is just the lack of the amount of effort you put in, but the lack of impact that you have allows you to,
yep,
recover so much faster. So
absolutely,
just that,
yeah,
that insight that you were sharing about every runner at some point turns into a cyclist. I've learned so much actually coming back into running after getting on a bike and cycling and understanding the cardiovascular stress that you can place in yourself. And then, of course, it's balancing that out with the impact that you need for running, the mechanics and all that kind of stuff. But it's the combination of sports absolutely is the best balance. And allows you to do it over the lifetime.
Are you running less now and running as well? Because
I'm
you're
still
cycling?
A lot.
Yeah.
I'm still running a lot. I get on the bike a decent amount.
Yep.
I think on a personal standpoint, you know, I'll use the bike to supplement running, but I also, you know, I've done a few duathlons, but I've always had a difficult time doing just one thing and balancing that. So I say multiple things. So Bob, I'd say I'm running probably 20% less than I did, you know, 20 years ago, but it's absolutely the bike and things like elliptical and understanding that it doesn't have to only be the bike, but it's these cross-training, different pieces or
yes.
apparatuses that we have these days to get the cardiovascular benefit, get the body working, but also allow the body to, not take the beating. And the other thing is just staying on the soft surface. That's a huge,
yep.
huge plus for any runner that you don't understand when you're 20.
we have a group out here called the Dead Runner Society, a cycling club. All these guys, you know, going back to, right, all these guys. And we're talking, we're talking guys, Kevin McCary and all these guys who were 212 marathoners that can't run anymore. They did 20 milers on concrete every single Sunday, and they're gone. Whereas the people who've sort of kept their mileage a little lower and ran soft surfaces, they're still out there doing it. What I love about what you guys are doing, look at your mix of athletes. When you've got a Leo Manzano, who's, he's a track guy. And then you've got Katie Zafaris, who's racing on Saturday at the Olympic triathlon. And at the same time, you've got Dave Scott, who's a six-time Ironman world champion, and obviously Luke McKenzie and Beth Gerdes, and the variety of athletes who have embraced the product. And at this level, nobody's embracing a product just for a paycheck. It's got to work for them, especially shoes.
So fun. So I'll tell you, it's so much fun right now, as you just said, going across, from Ultra Trail. I mean, two of the athletes we just signed on recently, Hayden Hawks and Jim Walmsley, are amazing athletes. One of the triathletes we just signed, is Ben Canoe.
Oh yeah,
he's going to line up this weekend as well and represent the U.S. And then, of course, in track, Colby Alexander, the whole New Jersey, New York track team, as you said, Leo. So across the board, I feel like I have my dream job, and that's I get to embrace all these amazing athletes, and it doesn't have to be, hey, we're only looking at track, or, hey, we're going to stop at ultras, or one sport. So I would tell you across the mix from triathlons to road, to trail, to ultras, to track, I get to cover the base. And I'll tell you, the variety and the competitiveness and I'm around such an amazing group of athletes that in many ways are so similar in terms of, their genetic makeup and their determination and goals. I absolutely am in a dream job right now.
So your dad's turning 80. Is he still running?
He's a little bit too banged up to run these days. So his diabetes almost took him down a couple of years ago with some physical problems. And Bob, I would tell you, he's no longer running. His foot's a little bit too messed up now, with his arch kind of broke down to run. But he goes out and walks every day. And my mom actually drives him a couple miles, and he walks home. And
I love it.
When I was talking today, he was kind of muttering that. He's not walking it as far as he wants and this and that. And he actually has an annual walk with a bunch of friends, an annual hike that I think has turned into a little bit more of a mini hike, but up in Lake Tahoe in a few weeks, so he's sort of training for that. So in his own way, he still has his goals.
I love it. So what is next for you in terms of athletically, and then what's next in terms of Hoka?
Athletically, I've just been trying to get settled back in the U.S. and keep my head above water with work and family and those things which are first, but athletically probably U.S. Cross this year. So get back and run in Tallahassee. So Club Cross is sort of the first thing, and then go after some records next year. I'm thinking about the 30K men's record and maybe planning some longer, maybe anything from 10 miles to 50K or even 50 miles, some of the 50 to 54 records. So kind of looking at that as my own, excitement or interest. With Hoka, I would tell you, You know, I've been going now from track, as we were saying, to triathlon.
Yes.
Came back from the Olympic trials, of course. Then
yep.
went to Lake Placid Ironman because we've got a wonderful partnership with Ironman. So, you know, what we have coming up is, of course, you know, we have Coeur d'Alene this weekend, which we have a team at, and then that leads all the way to eventually to Kona. So Kona's, of course, the World Championships is very much on our radar. We had a team there last week, you know, previewing and getting ready for activation. At the same time, we have a road mile at the end of this month, the Long Island Mile that Kyle Merber, who's one of our elite athletes, kind of directs and manages. It's 3 days before Fifth Avenue, I tell you, is coming up. And then, of course, I've got a team that's going to UTMB right now. So Mount Blanc is coming up over the next couple of weeks. So I have one of my colleagues meeting counterparts in Europe, and they're going to be over because we have some amazing athletes running. Magdalena Boulay, of course, you know, Olympian. She's lining up for Mount Blanc. We have Michael Wardian, just an amazing runner, you know, masters runner now, who does everything and holds multiple world records. He's lining up. So you'll see me at track meets. You'll see me in Kona, and then somehow try to squeeze my own fitness in to get psyched about my own goals.
Okay, so the one thing in the resume I've not heard is triathlon and you actually getting wet in a race. So when's this going to happen?
Probably when I learn to swim. You know? I have the utmost respect for triathletes, and I've thought about it about a million times. I've actually done. You know, I've done a few duathlons and,
yep.
and have been competitive. I've done pretty well in the pro field, even in I was in Giel, I want to say back in 2008, I was maybe 14th or 15th in the
wow.
pro race in the Powerman.
Yeah.
In fact, the guy that won that was that Belgian kid that ended up
passed away.
Getting
Benny,
yeah,
right?
Passing away in a
yeah.
fatal car accident.
Yes.
I've actually made a couple really wimpy attempts to improve my swimming technique, but it's still out there. So that's, I would tell you, Bob, it's a bucket list item that doesn't necessarily have to be Ironman, but it would be first learning to be a competent swimmer. I was looking at the buoys in Lake Placid, so the swim course, and I had to ask the guy, I said, okay, do they have to go, that's just one lap, right? And the guy said, no, they actually have to swim all the way out, come all the way back, and they said, that's just one lap. That's
they do
just
it twice.
Over a mile. And I said,
yeah.
I said, are you kidding me? And they said, no, they have to get out and then do it again. I said, all right.
Wait till you take a look when you're in Kona. I remember that the first time I went, the buoys are like in a different zip code. The first
yeah.
year I was there, there was like, I don't know, 300 of us. And the year before, in 1980, they had to move the swim from the ocean into a bay because of storms, big storm surf. So I wasn't the most competent swimmer. And I'm standing there looking at the waves breaking. This is in 81, the first year in Kona. They're breaking over the wall. And one of my friends, a friend, actually says to me, wouldn't drowning be the worst way to die? And I'm sitting there going, hey, thanks for that. That's wonderful. That's those buoys look forever. So I've got the perfect event for you. You need to do some of our pool triathlons that we do down here in Southern Cal, where you run a 5K, ride 10 miles, and do a 150-yard swim in a pool at the end.
that's where I am right now.
Exactly. And it
that's
brings
right
a ton of new people in because people are scared of the swim. You know, the swim is something that is really an issue. So we've got about 10 of those events here in Southern Cal, and it gets brand new people in who definitely go from the cruiser bike year one to the Cervelo year two with disc wheels and the whole bit. So it's you would love that. And it's sort of your entree to becoming, you know, shaving the legs and getting to the dark side with all the rest of us.
So it sounds like I need to sign up. I already have the Cervelo P3 with the disc and the 1080 front. So
you're
I'm all ready to rock. I've done world time trial for masters on a bike, and I've done 40K TTs and all that kind of stuff. It's the swim that absolutely intimidates me.
you are going to be perfect. We're talking tinsel try. In December, so you get out of New York for coming out to Southern California, do the tinsel try, which is 3 miles, 10 miles, and 150-yard swim in a pool, and you will be hooked forever. It's the coolest thing ever.
I think I'll sign up for that.
I love that.
That sounds like a good entry place for
I
me.
Love that. So when you look back at your running career, what's the best race you've ever had, the one that meant the most to you?
I mean, there have been a few. I mean, there have been a couple dipsies that where I just felt like it might have been the race, but I would tell you, for me, it always there was usually one or two races a year, but the dipsy usually stood out because I wanted to be successful in that. Yeah. And for me, that just meant finishing the race. And I always felt like if I came close to maximizing whatever I had on that day, and people always say, I gave 110%. And maybe I was critical. I think all athletes are pretty critical of themselves, but I always felt like, I could give 100%. I couldn't give any more than that. But if I came pretty close on that day to giving 100%, and usually I'd rate myself after and say, okay, it was 80% or 85%. But I had a couple dipsies in there when, in a couple of my best days, there was the fastest time that I ran. And in that race, it's a crazy race because I was third that day. I had the fastest time. And I think some people say I had the course record, but people debate that. But I broke 47 minutes on a funny, single track course that the Dipsy is. If you've run that, then I guess you can appreciate the time. But I was third. I lost to Sal Vasquez and an 8-year-old woman, or 8-year-old girl, I would say. I never saw him in the race. They kicked my butt and they started ahead of me. But
It's a handicap, right? It's a handicap race, you were probably one of the last ones to start.
I was in the last group that started, and for a while there, my goal was to try and win the race as a scratch runner, and I got as close as second. I think I still have 8 fastest times, something like that.
Wow.
But there were a couple of years, Bob, in there that I walked away from the race thinking that's what I had on the day. That's what I had, I would tell you that's what I think every athlete wants, to be able to walk away feeling like you gave had on that day. And
was that? Do you think Dipsy? How many times have you done Dipsy?
Maybe 20 times.
Oh, my
like that.
God.
25 times. I'm not sure.
Wow. That's your favorite race.
It's a wonderful race. I haven't run it since before moving to Germany. So I don't think I've done it since 2005. So it's still back on the radar now that I'm here do that. But I still have other goals. It's what's in front of you. So I would tell you one of my better races a couple of years ago was just getting back on the track and running a good 5,000. And it wasn't as fast as I ran, of course, 20 years ago, but it's all relative now.
Yeah, exactly.
You walk away thinking, here's what I had on the day, and I put out. There's always that time when, you're asking yourself questions. Do I make a move? How hard can I push myself? This is really hurting. Am I positive out here? All those things. And, when you make some good decisions or decide to maybe break your own internal barriers that you set, then that for me is, regardless how I do, I always feel pretty good about it.
I love it. Well, you have you run Catalina?
I never have, and I know the course is another roller coaster, monster trail event.
Yeah, you know what's cool about it? Because especially the Eco that's coming up November 19th, that is I think it's about 6,000 feet of climbing. And like the one in March, you have to take a boat over to the start, and then you run back. So basically, you either finish or you become a resident. I mean, it's really, you don't really have, there's not many dropouts. You really don't have much of an option. But the one in November, you start in Avalon, you walk to the start, and which is a couple hundred yards down the road, and there's some trail and there's some single track, and they found this Trans Catalina Trail a number of years ago after a big fire. It's really awesome. I think it's one of those races that you would dig, especially as a as a guy who loves dirt like you do. So
I've heard nothing but incredible things about Catalina. Actually, one of the greats of the sport, one of my friends, Steve Jones, former world record holder, has gone out there and run Catalina
a number of times.
I know, and he's such a humble person. And I was like, does anyone know you've run like 207? But he always tells me that course absolutely shatters him. And
yes.
It's an amazing course, and he wants to come back. So the trail event in November sounds equally brutal, and of course that means I probably like it.
Yeah, you would. The one that Steve has done has 4,000 feet of climbing. This one has 6,000.
That's 6, one in March, right?
Yeah, that's one in March. And usually Steve is a Sherpa for a number of the of our buddies, and he's got carrying a pack and carrying all their extra stuff. And people are like, "Oh, look at that! What a nice guy." Nobody realizes that he is a world record holder, and he's such an amazing guy. And there was a guy named Buffalo Bill McDermott who won that race like a dozen times. They used to call him the human shock absorber because the way he ran the downhills. There's some cool history there. You would dig it with the wild buffalo and boar on the course. And one of these years, you would dig it. Mike, thanks so much for taking so much time. Congrats on everything you and Hoka Ona Ona are doing for the sport. I just love the fact that I've got buddies who hadn't run in years, and they're back running and doing racing again. And, you know, you can't say that about too many products. They actually get people back into doing something they love.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I would tell you, I feel like I'm still the luckiest guy in the world to be able to do something every day that I absolutely enjoy, and to go to events where everybody's smiling and healthy and just in so many ways. It's just such a beautiful place to be. You know, that's with Hoka, but with all these different events that we've been talking about in different subcategories, I call them, of running. And
yes.
Yeah, I'm just super fortunate to be part of it. But thank you so much for having me, and equally an honor for me to be on the show. I've known your history through Competitor, and the Challenge Athletes Foundation has been something that, to me, it's absolutely amazing. And thank you for all you've done in that regard. I just think, that's again, you see these athletes out there now. We'll see them at the Paralympics coming
up.
You're a big part of that, Bob, so thank you.
Oh, no problem. And you know, the cool part is, Mike, every weekend we get to go to parties. That's really what nobody's getting up at 4 a.m. because they're going, oh, this is not going to be fun. They're coming out to do a marathon or a track meet or a triathlon or a trail run because it's their passion, and they just love being there. And then, you know, we get to be there to sort of support them doing what they love. And I love that.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I love it too.
Cool. Mike McManus has been our guest, Senior Sports Marketing Manager, Athletes and Sponsorships and Strategic Brand Partnerships for Hoka Ona Ona. Again, my name is Bob Babbitt. This is Babbittville Radio. We are brought to you by OSCAWellness.com, RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon and Half Marathon coming up on Saturday, November 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation. You can support Challenged Athletes Foundation at ChallengedAthletes.org. We've raised over $75 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here.